Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyavi Hare Jaya Radha Madhava Kunyavi Hare Chananada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Iskand Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Ananda Goti Vaishnavrin Kijai. Namacharya Srila Hoyadas Thakur Kijai. Rense Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nichananda Shidwaita Gadadha. Shibasidhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindhi Gijai Shishi Radhikrishnato Bhagavata Sayam Kundrada Kunda Giri Govran Gijai Vrindavanam Gijai Maturam Gijai Navadiptam Gijai Jagadvasami Gijai Yumramai Gijai Shimani Lasi Devi Gijai Samveda Bhakta Vrindhi Gijai Gaur Vrindhanandani All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is the assembled devotees. All glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bol. So first we'd like to welcome everybody who's watching online from all around the world. Radha Karuna, Rishikesh Jagadish Bhai, Sakshi, Govinda, Vikash, Rust Kelgi, Gokul Bandhu, wherever he is, Pritika Haripriya from Auckland, Rasamando from New Zealand, Gopika from New Zealand, Nanda Gopal from Canada, and that's the ones I know about. There's more than that, but that's what I know. So today is a very special day in the Vaishnava calendar. So Om Ganatimadandasya Gananjana Shvakaya Chachur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. It's the glorious appearance day of Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur. So, just like the song Jai Radha Madhava we were just chanting, and actually was written by Bhaktivinod Thakur. And Bhaktivinod Thakur, for those of you who don't know, he was the spiritual master of Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He was the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was the spiritual master of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's spiritual master is considered to be Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. That's an interesting story. Before I tell the story about his life, an interesting story of how Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj is his spiritual master. Because this shows the principle of not following the spiritual master blindly. So, what happened is that Bhaktivinoda Thakur originally took initiation from a devotee named Vipini Vihari Goswami. And it's very interesting that Bhaktivinoda Thakur accepted this spiritual master, and actually he is a great devotee of the Lord. But Vipini Vihari Goswami had a different opinion, slightly different opinion, I would say slightly or more different opinion than we have in the Krishna Conscious Movement. And that opinion was that Brahmanas are better than Vaishnavas. So, of course, we understand that a Vaishnava is automatically a Brahman, and we are not interested in caste consciousness at all. And we examine someone by what their qualities are. Chaturvarna Mayashushnam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. Someone is seen by the qualities, not by their birth. Just like I was talking to one gentleman today, yesterday, and he was complaining. He was in someone's office yesterday, and he was complaining about the Kali Yuga Brahmins. He said they're uneducated, they don't know anything. And I said, well, that's why we need a system of education, and you could help our Krishna Consciousness Movement establish such a system of education. So it was a very nice discussion. So, anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur was initiated originally by Vipini Vihari Goswami. And then something very interesting happened. There was a discussion at Midnapur, which is a place in Bengal, about who is superior, the Brahmins or the Vaishnavas. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur really didn't want to go to that discussion because he made believe he was sick, but actually, because that discussion was headed up, the Brahminical aspect of that discussion was headed up by the person who initiated him, Vipini Vihari Goswami. So he actually sent his son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to that particular discussion. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was very intelligent in how he presented everything. First, he started praising the Brahmins, and all the Brahmins were going, wow, finally he's understood us. Then at the end, or the middle, he began to establish, using Shastric quotes, because when a devotee establishes something, it has to be based on Shastra. It can't just be based upon my opinion or your opinion. It has to be based upon what Krishna says, Dharmam Tasakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. So anyway, so it was based on Shastra, and he basically defeated the Brahmins. And he defeated them so soundly that that everyone was so, let's say, overwhelmed to hear his explanations that the people rushed up to touch his feet. And the police were so worried that he was going to be, you know, hurt. You know, just like if someone's at a concert and everyone rushes up, you know, to touch the feet of the Bollywood singer. Because I know you're all addicted to that. Then they have police to protect. It's like one time I was in India, and there was one Bollywood star, Rani Mukherjee, and she came to one of our ceremonies at the temple, and the whole Indian army had to come out to protect her. It was really interesting. And there were politicians there, no one protected them, but movie stars. So anyway, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he defeated the Brahminical or caste Brahmins, and the police, in order to protect him, held off everybody, and not only that, they got a big container of water, and they dipped his feet into the water. And, you know, like, dipped him in the water, like that, and then distributed the water to everybody. It was an interesting occasion. So that was the initiating spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And because he had a different opinion, Bhakti Vinod Thakur really didn't consider him to be his eternal spiritual master, although he was very respectful to that person. And of course, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not at all respectful to this Vipini Bihari Goswami. In fact, one time, Vipini Bihari Goswami was with Bhakti Vinod Thakur, and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wouldn't even offer obeisances or come close. And so Vipini Bihari Goswami asked Bhakti Vinod Thakur, why is it that he's not coming close or offering obeisances? And Bhakti Vinod Thakur replied, this is a heavy reply, that he's taken a vow not to go within 100 meters of a sahaja. So anyway, so be that as it may, I'm not going to criticize these personalities. I'm just telling you the story. So in essence, our sampradaya, the point I'm making is our sampradaya is a shiksha sampradaya. Now, for those of you who don't know what shiksha means, it means instructions. So we find that there are many prominent links in our disciplic succession that are connected by siksha relationships rather than diksha relationships. For example, you have Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who is considered to be the spiritual master of Baladev Vidyabhushan. You've heard of these personalities before? No? Yes. Baladev Vidyabhushan is the one who wrote our commentary on the Vedanta known as the Govinda Bhash. And actually, that commentary was dictated by the deity in Jaipur, Govindadev. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is known as the Rasa Acharya. He established the understanding and the explanation in a very deep story format of the rasas, especially the conjugal rasas. So anyway, so what happened is that Baladev Vidyabhushan was initiated previously by someone in our sampradaya, that is the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya, but he actually accepted Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur as his prominent spiritual master. So we also find that, you know, within ISKCON, that the relationship is actually based upon instruction and guidance, and so that's considered very, very important. And say about that. Yeah, so Prabhupada, of course, that depends on someone's shraddha, you know, who was their most prominent spiritual master. But Prabhupada's instruction should be at the forefront of each and every one of our lives. Prabhupada's instructions, Prabhupada's example is very, very important. And Prabhupada, in essence, is everyone's Shiksha Guru in the Krishna Consciousness Movement. We always should remember that, because that's the for lack of a better word, that's the glue that holds all of us together. Because in the future, and even now, you know, there's so many different gurus initiating the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. But we're all one family. We don't want to have, like, say, partisan spirit. You know, my guru is better than your guru. Actually, the Gaudiya Math fell into that particular trap. There was fighting between the disciples of different gurus. In fact, some of that fighting even took place in the temple room. You know, one time, one disciple was chanting the pranam mantra for his particular guru, and the other one said, you know, what about my guru? And then, boom, 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 boom. So, we want to avoid, of course we want to avoid that, but we, as insofar as a positive explanation, we want to have loving relationships between all of us, because we're all related, we're all Prabhupada's family. So this is a very important point to remember. Don't want any partisan group, guru groupies. Just like that. That's one. The word groupie comes from some Bollywood or Hollywood or rock and roll stars. People follow them around, and they're just like crazy over them. They're so crazy that they would kill them if they could. If they could. So the point is, if we really want to please Prabhupada, we all have to work together. So anyway, with that brief introduction, we're going to start talking about Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life and pastimes. And he was born in 1838 in Nadia. That's West Bengal, of course. And he was the seventh son of his father. I'm just going to skip over a lot of this. So in the beginning of his childhood, he was in a very wealthy situation. Very, very opulent. But when he was 11 years old, his father passed away. Actually, his brother died prematurely from cholera. You'll see in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, there's a lot of, let's say, unfortunate or difficult circumstances he went through throughout his life. A lot of challenges. And basically, you'll probably see this in the lives of every great devotee, like Prabhupada, for example. Because, as Prabhupada said, without opposition, where is the chance for glorious victory? And these oppositional occurrences or elements that are there in the lives of great devotees are, let's say, arranged by Krishna to glorify the great devotee. Because if there weren't these things, then, you know, what would be the drama, what would be the attractiveness, what would be the teachings in the lives of great devotees? Like even Arjuna, the Pandavas, how many difficulties they went through. And Arjuna was ultimately confronted in the battle of Kurukshetra with the choice. It's called a dilemma. Dilemma means you have two choices, and neither one is really good. In this particular case, he was confronted with the choice of killing his grandfather and other relatives and cousin brothers, or just renouncing everything. And of course, in the beginning, he took the choice of wanting to renounce everything. But after that, after Krishna's instruction, he took the right choice. He made the right choice. So we see this in the lives of many, many great devotees that are actually subjected to these difficulties and choices in life, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was no exception. So, when he was 11 years old, his father passed away, and then he became immersed in poverty instead of wealth. And so he was with his mother at this particular point, living a very poverty-stricken existence. And so his mother arranged, now this may appear a little strange, but his mother arranged that he got married when he was 12, and he married a girl who was 5 years old. Now, let me explain, so you all don't think this is weird. In the Vedic system, they didn't live together until they were, you know, until they were older, much older, you know, maybe even in the 20s sometimes. But this would actually fix the boy and girl's mind so that they would be not wandering, their minds would not be wandering, and they wouldn't be having so many boyfriends, girlfriends, or whatever friends. You know, they would, their mind would be fixed. They would know that this is going to be my husband, this is my husband. They wouldn't live with each other. There would be some exchange of gifts like that. But still, it really kept the society stable. Now, nowadays, of course, that system of child marriage is not recommended because it's been abused by society and by people. But originally, it was a very, very good idea. Very, very good idea. I mean, nowadays, of course, I do a lot of preaching in the Western world. I don't think this happens here because all the boys and girls are very chaste here in Fiji. I'm saying that in a joke. You know, nobody breaks the principles here in Fiji. But when I do preaching in the Western world, which is different than your chaste, nice society here, then we hear, you know, so one of the girls comes up and says, oh, here's my boyfriend. Next week, here's my boyfriend. Next week, another boyfriend. That's what I mean. Next week, another boyfriend. Huh? What happened to Charlie? Oh, I didn't like him. What happened to John? He was a dud. So every week, you know, like a different boyfriend. Huh? And then every week, he's my eternal love. Huh? Eternity is not lasting for very long nowadays. Isn't that, I mean, to me, eternity means forever, never, never. So we want Krishna conscious marriages that last forever and ever and ever. You know, these are spiritual marriages. Anyway, so that's why he got married. And he became very, very educated at that time. As I said, he didn't live with his wife, obviously. And then he was sent away by his mother for education, and he became very expert in English and many languages, actually, like the Goswamis of Vrindavan. He's actually considered the seventh Goswami. That's one of his names or nicknames. Because generally the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were all sannyasis in the renounced order of life. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not a sannyasi. He did take sannyas like the final few months of his life just to absorb himself in chanting and hearing. But he wasn't a sannyasi. And why do we consider him the Goswami? Because Goswami means one who controls the senses. And he was given the highest title. The highest title is not Swami. The highest title is Thakur. When someone has that title, it means they're in the topmost level. So he's a Paramahamsa. So, and also because of his contribution, his writings, as many of the songs we sing are from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, many of the books we read, many of the commentaries that were in the books that Prabhupada used to formulate his books, actually are from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's a very important personality in our sampradaya. Many mornings I hear or read his Jiva Dharma, which is an exposition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Jiva Dharma. The name Jiva Dharma literally means the Dharma of the Jiva. You know, the internal Sat Dharma of the Jiva. So I read this, and this book is such an amazing book. He would portray the philosophy of Krishna consciousness utilizing stories. You know, so many of us, it's hard for us just to hear philosophy, right? You know, different philosophical points. Well, here's an amazing story in the Jiva Dharma in which he takes the person all the way from, let's say, Mayavad philosophy all the way to the conjugal ras with Krishna. He takes our understanding up there. I mean, for example, in the Jiva Dharma, it begins, one of the first stories, it begins with Mayavadi sannyasi who's in Varanasi, and he's chanting Om. He's not chanting Hare Krishna. And he's meditating on Brahman. He's perfectly realized. Then a devotee comes around, Harinam Sankirtan. He hears the holy names. His life becomes changed. He rushes to Mayapur. He gives up his prestige as a Mayavadi sannyasi and becomes a great pure devotee. So anyway, so there's many stories like that. And there's other stories like household couples who are very greedy. And I've told that story before. Whose children basically mistreat them, then they become great devotees. That's the beginning, you know, the sambandha. and then the Abhideya, and then finally Prayojana. So anyway, well, I'm not going to give a summary of that work right now. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur also became very ill a number of times. He had trouble with his health. There was actually a Muslim soothsayer who predicted that Bhaktivinoda Thakur would be recognized as a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Soothsayer means someone who can tell the future. He went to college in Calcutta, and he composed many English works even before he manifested himself as a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One is called the Poriad, which is a book about Alexander the Great. Some of you may know who Alexander the Great is. But anyway, it was like a novelette about Alexander the Great. So he was quite an author. And in the beginning, he was influenced more by, let us say, the Western authors, like Emerson and Thoreau, and even some Americans like that, and even by Christianity. So he didn't really exhibit, you know, his devotional inclinations until some time later. Of course, we should understand these are the pastimes of a great devotee. So he studied Western religion, and he was very attracted by Christian theology. And he thought, this is much better than the Hinduism. It's interesting, isn't it? Because Hinduism at that time was generally taught following the footsteps of Vivekananda and Ramakrishna. I don't know if any of you have heard of those two personalities. But there's some people, I think they even have a Ramakrishna mission here, don't they, in Fiji? And they were just like Pakka Mayavadis. In other words, actually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur called Ramakrishna like, what is that word in Bengali? Pagala. You know that word?
Yeah.
Crazy. And there was, you know, imagine if you go there and say, your guru is Pagala. You have the same word in Hindi?
Yes.
You know, Pagala Babu. So there was a riot when he did that. But that's the strict preaching of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, didn't like Hindu monism. In other words, impersonalism and voidism and everything like that. And he would read the writings of different Western authors like Channing, Parker, Emerson, and Newman, which probably none of you knew. And he would give lectures in the British Indian Society. So he actually appeared to be almost a follower of the British at that particular point. So his grandfather, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was 21, all these things happened before he was 21. You know, he was brilliant. His grandfather actually told him when he was dying in 1859, the grandfather was dying, not Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that he should tour all the monasteries and temples in the state of Orissa, and he would be a great devotee of the Lord and preach Krishna consciousness basically all over the world. So he became further educated, and then his first son was born. His first son's name was Achyutananda, was born in 1860. He published a book describing all the ashrams and temples in Orissa. And then he became the headmaster of his school. It's not important where it was. And he was examining all the philosophies and practices of the various sects in Bengal. And then finally, he heard about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he couldn't get a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he was looking all over for it, and he just couldn't find a copy. But in the meantime, something happened. His first wife died from disease, and he married a second wife, whose name was Bhagavati Devi Dasi, not the lady here. Not Vasudeva's wife, but, you know, that was many years ago. So then, eventually he became posted as the government magistrate in Bengal, and then collections officer. He had so many different positions in the government there. And then he started to publish different poems. One was known as Sannyasi, Vijnanagram. And he became more and more attracted to the mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So many, many things happened. I'm going to skip through a few pages here. So as soon as he got the copies in 1868, of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, he kept reading them repeatedly. And his faith in Krishna consciousness really accelerated and developed very, very quickly, and he became absorbed in Krishna consciousness and understood the superiority of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings to the teachings of every other religion in the world. So this actually establishes the superiority of Lord Chaitanya's teachings, because here was someone who was so educated, studied everything, you know, Muslim religion, the Christian religion, the Jewish religion, Parsis, everything. And eventually he comes to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the reason why Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared not to be a devotee in the beginning, simply to teach us how elevated, how the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya is the most elevated, most perfect philosophy. Someone who does a search. This is actually, it's a typical story that you find. Someone searches for the absolute truth, and then they arrive, they come to the perfect conclusion. And just like we have one of our devotees in the movement, Radhanath Maharaj, who wrote this book, Journey Home. I don't know if anyone's read that book. You read that book. So it actually is a really interesting book, how he went here, went there, went to Nepal, looking for the truth, meditating in the Ganges with the crocodiles, and finally he becomes a devotee. Understand? So that proves to us, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life proves to us the superiority of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. Then he began to publish songs about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called the Sachi Nandana Prema Lankura. And then he began to preach Srimad Bhagavatam. Other things happened in his life, very interesting stories, that there was a village in India called Champarana, and there was a ghost that was harassing everybody. This ghost used to live in a banyan tree. The ghost actually had the ability to influence the local judge. So anyone who had a court case, he'd go to the tree and he'd pray to the tree and he'd win the court case. It's better than hiring a lawyer. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was known as Kedaranatha Dutt at that particular time, engaged the father of a great girl scholar to read Srimad Bhagavatam under the tree. And after 1 month, guess what happened? The tree crashed to the ground and the ghost left. And everyone got faith in Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And because he was the magistrate, he had to deal with so many bogus, let's say, upper sampradayas or bogus persons who were declaring themselves to be God. One story is this rascal, Vishikashena. He was telling everybody that he had some mystic power, and he was telling everybody that he was Mahavishnu. And his friend was Brahma, and he had another friend known as Lord Shiva. So they had three of them together, you know, the three guna avatars had appeared on earth. And what he was doing, I mean, if that wasn't bad enough, he was arranging for people in different villages around to give their daughters to him so he could have his, quote, rasa lila, in other words, illicit sex life. And he had so many mystic powers. He could make flames come from his head, produce fire from anything. And everybody became afraid of him. Even the kings began to worship him and sent him women to enjoy life with. And everyone was afraid. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I'll get rid of this guy. So what he did is he went to see Vivekashena, and this rascal showed many powers to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and said, I know what you come for, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you should worship me instead of Lord Jagannath. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, come with me to see Lord Jagannath. And this person committed a great offense. He said, why should I come to see Lord Jagannath? He's just a piece of wood. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur got so angry and incensed at that point, he actually dragged the rogue back to Puri and arranged where he was guarded by 36 Muslim constables and 72 policemen. That's a lot of people. So Brahma and Shiva didn't get arrested because they claim they had been forced to do it. It's funny. Anyway, so the trial lasted 18 days. Thousands of people were actually picketing the courthouse. Let God go. Let Mahavishnu go. And at one point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daughter got very sick because of the mystic powers of this particular individual. Another point, Bhaktivinoda Thakur got sick. But he said, let us all die, but this rascal must be punished. That was his determination. So then at the last day of the trial, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was very sick, but he dragged himself to the court, pronounced the man guilty. And as the man was getting ready to be put into jail, one of the English officers, Dr. Walter, cut the guy's hair off. And the guy lost all of his power and fainted like a dead man. He wasn't dead at that point. But after 3 months, he took poison and killed himself in prison. So that's what happens when you try to be God and you're not God. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur kept studying, you know, the teachings of the acharyas. Between 1874 and 1893, he spent much of his time in seclusion, chanting japa and writing many books, such as the Krishna Sanghita. He was a very prolific author. Tatva Sutra, Tatva Viveka, Kalyana Kalpataru, Advaita Kostuba. And while he was in Jagannath Puri, he established the, because he was a magistrate, he established in the Jagannath Mandir that the deity worship would be very punctual, because previously they were just like so spontaneous. They would greet the deities at any time of the day. They would take money from the deity hundi and spend it on themselves. So he actually regulated the deity worship there. And to such an extent that he discovered that the king was actually taking 80,000 rupees for sense gratification from the hundi. So what he did is he sentenced the king, because this is the British rule at that time, so the kings weren't absolute. He sentenced the king to offer Lord Jagannath Bhoga 52 times a day. And so all the king's money was running out. The king got very upset. The king hired 50 pandits to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur by performing a yajna. So for a whole month, they were chanting, Om, you know, whatever, kill, Mrityu, Mrityu, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They were chanting that. And when the last day occurred, what happened, instead of Bhaktivinoda Thakur dying, the king's oldest son died. So Krishna protected him. So Krishna always protects his devotees. Anyway, so then he continued writing books. And then finally, after all this, you know, Vaishnava activity, he took the initiation from Bipini Vihari Goswami, who was basically from the line of Jadava Mata, the wife of Lord Nityananda. And then his seventh son, Lalit Prasad, was born. He began to publish a Vaishnava journal, Sajana Toshini, and established the Bhakti Bhavan in Calcutta. I'm just going very, very quickly. He published the Bhagavatam, a Bhagavad Gita, with a Sanskrit commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Let's see. So many literary contributions, I'm not going to talk about them all right now. In the year 1887, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to quit government service and go to Vrindavan. But Lord Chaitanya told him in a dream, you will go to Vrindavan, but first you have to discover the appearance place of myself. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one time during his stay in Krishnanagar, He was looking for the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was sitting on the roof of this Dharmashala, known as the Rani Dharmashala in Navadvip, and he saw a great effulgence coming from Mayapur Dham. And so the next day he went to that place, and this was confirmed that it was the appearance place of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And not only was confirmed by the local residents, but later on, he brought his spiritual master, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was 125 years old at that time. And he was being carried around in a basket by his disciple. So when they got to this place, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj became so ecstatic that he jumped out of the basket and started jumping in ecstasy, even though he was 125 years old. So in other words, Bhaktivinoda Thakur established the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and arranged, actually, for a temple to be constructed there. And in 1894, he retired from his post of deputy magistrate. He was the first one to reach out to the Western world by writing this literature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts in English. And that was found in Canada and other places later on by Prabhupada's disciples when they came to those places. On June 23rd, 1914, he left this world in Jagannath Puri. And that was also the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami. So, just want to talk a little bit about Bhaktivinoda Thakura's schedule when he was working for the government, because this is actually very inspiring for all of us who may be working on the outside. So there was one Supreme Court judge who wrote about Bhaktivinoda Thakura. I knew Thakur Bhaktivinoda intimately as a friend and relation. Even under the pressure of official work as a magistrate in charge of heavy subdivision, he would always find time for devotional contemplation and work, and whenever I met him, our talk would turn in a few moments to the subject of bhakti and dvaita-dvaita-vada and the saintly work that lay before him. Service of God is the only thing he longed for, and service under the government, however honorable, was to him a clog. Clog means like an impediment. So here's his schedule. This is his daily schedule. We'll see if any of you can follow this schedule. At 7:30 to 8 o'clock at night, he would take rest. At 10 o'clock, he would get up. After 2 hours or 2.5 hours, he'd light his oil lamp, write, and stay writing till 4 o'clock in the morning. And also you find Srila Prabhupada didn't follow precisely, that schedule. But he actually rose at about 1 o'clock in the morning and wrote until about 5 in the morning, 5 or 6 when he went on his morning walk. 10 o'clock he'd rise, 4 a.m. he'd take a half hour rest. Then at 4:30 he'd rise, chant his japa till about 7. At 7 o'clock he would write letters, 7:30 read, 8:30 receive guests. 9:30 to 9:45, you take a 15-minute, what we call nowadays a power nap. 9:45, you would take another bath, breakfast, a half quart of milk, a couple of rotis, fruit, and then 9:55, 10-minute breakfast. He'd go to court, and he'd wear a coat and pants to court. But he had double-sized neck beads and tilak. He would decide his cases immediately. He did not allow any humbug. You know what humbug is? Humbug means nonsense. He would shave his head, even as a magistrate, every month. He never allowed a harmonium. He was very strict. And he never had any debts. At 10 o'clock, the court began. At 1 o'clock, the court finished. He'd come home, bathe, and refresh. 2 o'clock, go back to court. 5 o'clock in the evening, translate words from Sanskrit to Bengali. Then he'd take his evening bath and meal of rice, and the whole day was rice, chapatis, and a little bit of milk, and the whole pride. And his amiable disposition, that means his kind disposition, was a feature of his life. He never accepted gifts because that would be considered bribery in court. He even declined honors and titles offered by the government to him. He was very strict in moral principles and avoided luxurious life. He would not even chew betel. Many of you don't know what betel is, but it's chewed in India. You could probably get it here too, right? Pan, yeah. He did not go to theaters. You know, so that's a lesson for all of you. He spoke Bengali, Sanskrit, English, Latin, Urdu, Persian, and Orient. Amazing. And he started writing books at the age of 12 and continued writing out, writing for his whole life, a profuse number, that means many, many volumes, up to the time of his departure from this world. So that's the life, a general summary of the life of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So does anyone have any questions? We've still got 3 minutes left. What's that?
In one of the classes, you mentioned about the children of Israel. You said they were the children of people of Israel, but we went on later to say how God can be for one particular type of person. Okay, I could stop that. We come to the Bhagavad Gita. When you look at the devotees, they are very special for Krishna. Devotees of Lord Krishna, they are very special for Krishna. They are special for Krishna.
Yes.
What about those that are non-devotees? Are they also special
to Krishna? Everybody's special to Krishna. Krishna loves everyone. Krishna says in the Gita, Samoham sarvabhuteshu matname dveshasti napriya. And he's reciprocating with everyone. So, of course, one of Bhaktivinoda Thakura's sons, which I forgot to mention, was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born as a result of Bhaktivinoda Thakur praying for a ray of Vishnu. Just like the other day we were talking, last Sunday, we were talking about sanskaras. You understand? One of the samskaras is the Garbhanan samskara. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had many, many children. However, he was always praying for great devotees to appear. And so his children were devotees. I mean, some of them had disagreements with each other, like Lalit Prasad Thakur. He had many disagreements with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, but they were devotees. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur prayed for the appearance of Lord Chaitanya's right-hand man. That means his personal assistant. And as a result, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared in this world. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he appeared with his umbilical cord wrapped around his neck like a Brahmin thread. There's so many stories about Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, such as he would not eat his first grains unless they were Jagannath Prasad. He refused to eat his first grains, and his first grain ceremony happened during the Rath Yatra. Lord Jagannath personally stopped there during the Rath Yatra at his house, and nobody could move the cart. And that's when the grain ceremony occurred. So Lord Jagannath personally came. These are such great devotees that Lord Jagannath, during the Rath Yatra, with millions of people there, personally came to witness the Anaprasana ceremony of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So this is the type of grahastha we need. A grahastha, not Bhakti Siddhanta, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a grahastha who has children like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So those of you who are married, you should aspire for that. So he's the ideal example of grahastha life. And showing that grahastha life doesn't mean you simply leave Krishna and get into some romantic scenario, but you actually give everything to Krishna. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Manasa Deha Geha Yogishamor Arpilam Tuyapare Nandakishore. That was his statement about grahastha life. Whatever I have, my mind, my body, Deha Geha Yogishamor, is yours, my home, my wife, my family, everything belongs to you. So the common concept people have when they get married is that Now I get things that belong to me. My wife, my children, my home, my car, my mind, I and mine. So it increases. Pumsa Striya Mituni Bhavamitum Tayor Bhutu Ridi Granti Aho Atograhet Shetra Sutapta Bhatar Janashim Ohomyam Ahamameti. That's the general procedure. That you put the man and the woman together and Pumsa Striya Mituni Bhavamitum. They fall in love. Ridi Granti, then the knot in the heart becomes very tight. You know what I said? Ridi Granti. And then Atograhet Shetra Sutapta Bhatar. That all these things, my home, everything, etc., sutapta, children, retire, etc., janasya moha, I become bewildered. Someone becomes bewildered. Aham meti. And that's the problem. It's mine. And the two divisions of false ego are I and mine. So proper Krishna conscious grahasta, not a grihamati, but a grahasta is thinking everything is yours, Krishna. Nothing is mine. That's the proper consciousness. So, I think Krishna's saying we have to end right now. So, today is the glorious appearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We want to appreciate everybody who's watching us. Madhvacharya is watching us from here. Alikash Chand, Bhagavatas from Europe, Krishna Priya from the United States, Surrendery, Gigu Boys, Shamalata, let's see, Mayapur from Hawaii, Arjuna, Tulsidas, Radhasharana, wow, Dayaka, Dear Prashanta from Europe, Sarvashakti, wow, there's so many people I can't even mention them all who've been watching us this morning. Thank you very much. All glory is to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.